What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
One note of housekeeping, we are winding down our Patreon at the end of October. There will be no more Patreon. We'll just be coming out on Wednesdays for free for everybody. Thank you so much to our Patreon family for supporting us through all this time. We love you. I thank you so much for the support. I look forward to continuing to rock on with this show with you for years to come.
Okay, ready?
Think what you know, and it's about a time when you get yourself in. We are I wanna know some of the things she's done. I think about everyone you need. I hold in it, things are moving real now. I have you seen you wanting you. Hey,
it's a ratio. Okay, though. It's a racial. Okay, though.
That might be the best question I've ever been asked.
Let me get some of your thoughts and philosophies on being great on stage.
Writing, because I'm coming from writing, I put a lot of weight on that, right? But also, the things you remember in comedy, think of the bits that you remember in your life.
Yeah.
The Eddie Murphy's barbecue, right?
Yeah, my God.
It's incredibly well written.
Yeah.
And not only is it well written, it's like a movie. Literally is, they're time jumps. They're like, Gus, remember when da-da-da-da-da, and she stuck her head in the water and said, goona-goo-goo. Like,
now that's a fire.
Like, that's a flashback within a spoken, right. Like, incredibly well-written, and has one of my favorite reactions ever I watched it recently. When he finishes, someone yells out, do it again. And Eddie goes, do it again? Like, why would I do what I just did? Like, what if that's how good it is? People are like, I want to watch it immediately now.
Neil Brennan has been a professional stand-up comedian for like 15 years. He's been a friend of mine for a while. He's in town to promote a new stand-up theater experience at the Cherry Lane Theater called Unacceptable. You can get tickets online. The show's called Unacceptable. He's hysterical, and he's interesting to me because he's one of these white guys who loves black culture, and because he was such an important part of Chappelle's show, he's gotten some sort of a pass to say certain things and to have certain opinions and to make certain jokes because black people love him for being an important critical part of Chappelle's show. So I always love talking with Neil. Let's get into it. It's Neil Brennan on Touré Show. So you're here in New York doing a show called Unacceptable.
Yes, sir.
At the Cherry Lane Theater. Mm-hmm. And you'll be doing that till November 11?
21. Yeah.
Even
November
longer.
21st.
Can you talk about how and what? Like, is there a thesis?
The thesis is that I don't do anything normal. None of what I am is
just in your life.
Kind of. I mean, none of what I am is especially celebrated in terms of habits. Like, don't drink, don't smoke weed, don't eat meat, not married, don't have kids. I'm a little more black affiliated than white affiliated. What are the others? No, I'm liberal, but like, I don't agree with most of what liberals do. Like, no, I'm just not fitting into any of the.
So you are unacceptable.
Yes.
In every context.
Most contexts, I am unacceptable. There are very few in which they're like, Neil, welcome, our guy. I mean, like, individually, people.
So is this a little more memoir-ish?
Mm. Yeah. Even comedy, I'm accepted, but I'm accepted as a writer. So it, like, the level of acceptance is kind of qualified. I'm accepted as a comedian more, but there's always a little bit like, nah, you know?
But you've been doing this for a long time.
I've been doing stand-up for 15 years. I've been in comedy 30. So, but that's wrong. The way I did it was unacceptable. You can't. No. Once you're a writer, you're always a writer.
No.
Some people. Yeah.
No. But you're right. No. Right. You can't then break off onto the stage.
No. Yeah. You're not. No. Think about the amount of people that have gotten. First of all, think about the amount of people that have gotten well known as a comedy writer. How many people are there?
Not that many.
Yeah. Larry David, Tina Fey, Louis C.K.
I just had Hari Condobolo on the show.
I wouldn't even. He's writer. More. I didn't know he was a writer. I mean, well, you know what? He didn't write it. You know, like I wrote a popular thing. So then going from that to like now I'm a comedian.
People are like, what?
Like Tina and all those people were like ushered in.
Yeah.
I was never. No, I got no. Like Lauren was like, Tina, no, we'll come. You'll do a show. I didn't get any of that. So that's more
three mics was like. The craft, you know, and I can do three sorts of comedy at the same time.
Well, it wasn't even comedy. The middle mic's not comedy. There's two laughs in it.
Right.
One of them's black dudes only express emotions when they do it with a saxophone. So that's why you think it is a very good joke about black male emotion. So maybe that spoke to you. So this is more. This is more like comedy. It's more stand-up with integrated. It's not. I don't really do narrative so much as like emotional tone. You know?
Okay.
Like there's an emotional tone to what I'm saying, but it's more. I dare say it's a little bit more musical in that. Like, I don't. What is Frank Ocean upset about? I don't know. Something. He's upset about something, but I don't know exactly what.
If I want to go, I can still go. I can still get tickets.
You can still go, yes.
Now, if I don't
only
live
if in you go to unacceptableshow.com. That's the only way to get them. Go ahead.
If I don't live in New York, I should I pilgrimage to New York or might this travel?
I don't want to. I'm going to handle this like an NBA player in free agency. We're going to handle the streaming after the season's over.
Okay.
I don't want to give anybody the wrong. I don't want to give anybody a disincentive to come and see me live in New York because I have a lot of tickets to sell. So come on through. Pull up, as they say.
Pull up. Why are you still doing comedy?
Why?
Yeah.
Because it's great. Because it's the best. It's the best expression you can. What should I be doing?
I don't know. It's the best. It's the most fun thing for you.
I get to think something and then say it and see if people agree with it and get an unconscious emotional reaction from people in unison. Fucking beat it. Beat it. Especially when you feel like most of the world doesn't really give you much of a chance to talk back. Sure. Like the world's just constantly, like even out this window, there's four different billboards that I can see talking at me, let alone buildings saying you need to get a more stable job. But like, there's just all kinds of messages coming at. So it's a great opportunity for me to just go like, may I interject, world? Here's what I think.
It's one of, if not the hardest of the entertainment disciplines. You know, people might be a rapper and become an actor or be a singer and become a this or that, or even athlete, become a rapper. Nobody does X and then becomes a stand-up comedian.
They think they can.
Right? Comics will branch out into, you know.
Comics can do anything.
Yeah,
because the actor. Because the actor, writer, director. You know the split, you know in movies, the playback system?
Yeah.
Invented by Jerry Lewis, literally.
Oh.
When he shot one of his early movies, he was like, I need a way to see this, because it was a comic. So he's like, I need a way to see this, I need playback. Like comics, whatever, I could go on and on about like what comics have contributed more to comedians. If you think about like spoken culture, most of the last 25 years, a lot of it's comedy.
And when I think about just even the conversation that I have with a wide array of people, a comedian might take over the conversation to where I can't even think straight anymore. You're just pummeling me with comments.
Well, that's just being aggravating.
It's like, you know, as an interviewer, it's fine. And I'm like, I've completely lost control. Singers and rappers and politicians and writers.
Draw it out of them.
They don't do that.
Right. Well, that's the good thing. I would say the great thing about like being friends with comedians or even having dinner with a comedian. I'll be funny at dinner.
Yeah.
David Blaine, there's not going to be any magic. Alicia Keys ain't going to sing.
She's not going to start singing.
Like, I know lots of these people. They don't do the thing at dinner. You want them to.
Well, some comics are funny all the time.
Right.
Right? Like, we've had dinner. You are funny all the time. Some people are not.
Some people are a little more morose.
I thought Cat Williams was that. He came to do an interview. Whatever. He was like, I'm here. I'm professional, but I'm not going to make you laugh right now. And I was thrown off that he's not like making me laugh. And he was very polite and very professional, but he wasn't like funny. And that's which I was expecting. But
I have a very cute Cat Williams story.
Tell.
I did not know Cat Williams at all until I met him in 2019 or something. His last special on Netflix, he opens with, I believe, 13 minutes about Jacksonville.
Okay.
Literally talking about Jacksonville for 13 minutes, which in comedy is like malpractice because you're on a worldwide broadcast platform. We were all texting each other like, he's still talking about it. but we all came to the conclusion like, that worked. It fucking worked. The motherfucker somehow, he's doing literally like local avenue jokes, like names of streets and malls should not work. I do a New York magazine or New York.com, a Vulture probably, piece about like something I liked. And I said, I really liked Cat Williams last opening. Shouldn't have worked. Absolutely works. Hilarious. And I meet Cat a year later and I go, you know, I spoke about you in an interview. And he goes, I printed it out. Because how often does another comedian speak well of a comedian? It's just like the cutest. Like, this is so great. I don't even know if I believe him, but like, God bless him.
Sometimes you need stories that reflect the community, the culture, the world that you love. You can get some of that on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and how to create world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is an account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective and diving into the things that we care about and the stories we want to hear that center Black perspectives. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience. Turn on NPR and listen to Black Stories, Black Truths, because Black stories make up what it means to be in America, and stories should never be told without us. Listen to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get your podcasts. Great Expectations is a new novel from the New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham, a keenly observed novel about a young Black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about the main character David's 18 months working for Senator Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets all sorts of people who raise questions about history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his life in a new way and come to terms with his identity as a young Black man in America. Colin McCann says Great Expectations will be one of the most talked about novels of the year. And others have called this book epic, intimate, and brimming with brilliance. It got a starred review in Publishers Weekly, which is a big deal. And it's a coming-of-age story that takes you inside the Obama campaign like nothing else. Great Expectations is an extraordinary book available wherever books are sold.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
Hey there, I'm Nadia Komodo. Check out my show, Tigress, which is basically my unfiltered and unapologetic journey of being a work in progress.
Like, I hope that I am authentic and I try to be as unfiltered as I possibly can. I am so passionate about what I do, from talking about periods to wanting to build community around the cause to loving the business that I'm working on.
Tune in each week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are streamed.
Let me get, are there some rules that we can disseminate to the folks? Like, you know, you're like, you can't do 13 minutes on Jacksonville.
Well, but I, like, if you're maybe you do a joke about the city just to get the crowd, and then you maybe cut it out of the special. I mean, there's so, I need more specific than rules. I mean, a little more specific. Like, what are the rules? I don't know.
I mean, just let's say some of your thoughts and philosophies on being great on stage.
Writing. Obviously, because I'm coming from writing, I put a lot of weight on that, right? But also, the things you remember in comedy, think of the bits that you remember in your life.
Yeah.
The Eddie Murphy's barbecue, right?
Yeah, my God.
It's incredibly well written.
Yeah.
It's incredibly well written. And not only is it well written, it's not even it's like a movie. It literally is, they're time jumps. They're like, Gus, remember when and she stuck her head in the water and said, goona goo goo. Like,
no, that's a fire.
Like, that's a flashback within a spoken, like, incredibly well written. And has one of my favorite reactions ever in, if you, I watched it recently, at when he finishes, someone yells out, do it again. And Eddie goes, do it again. Like, why would I do what I just did? Like, what is that? That's how good it is. People are like, I want to watch it immediately now. A lot of Dave's bits, a lot of Chris's bits, they're portable. They're memorable. They're metered.
See, that's interesting because Rock will do short, brilliant thoughts that I can portable into a conversation.
Yes.
Chris Rock said bullets should be $1,000. Oh my God, so brilliant. Chappelle is doing 20-minute stories I can barely remember, and I'm dying through the
story. I'm talking more old Dave.
Okay.
More like 2000, Kill Him Softly, and the For What It's Worth, where it's like, how old is 15, and the baby in the nightclub.
And he's talking about, I want to be so famous that I can put my dick on somebody's shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'd be like, oh my God, it's David.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or like, yeah, the Clinton joke. She's so famous that she sucks my dick and then she's famous. Like, or
right,
whatever.
Right,
that,
right,
like,
right, right.
The Clinton joke about like, you, come here. Like, just very good. And then it's slightly political. It's just like a ton of, he just was a great joke writer.
But
like,
he's become this epic storyteller.
Now it's a different thing. It's like a different, you're absolutely right. The shape of them is impossible to track to the point where we all just go like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, we all are.
The third time I met OJ,
right.
And I'm like, my brain can barely understand the scope of this hour.
Yeah, it's a great, but he's a, I would argue, and I've said this, he's one of the greatest public speaker, one of the best recorded public speakers of all time.
Is he the greatest stand-up ever, Chappelle?
That's just preference. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Like, is that your preference?
Yeah, I have like a tie. It's like a tie.
With who?
If we got Chris, Dave, Bill Burr, Patrice.
Wow.
Louie. Sarah's getting in there.
Sarah's
Wanda.
Wanda Sykes.
I'm sure Mulaney. There's people. I always forget people, but like there are people. There's just like a
I feel
cluster
like
the, of people. The Eddie, obviously.
The elite argument.
Pryor, is, Carlin, is yeah, Jerry. That, again, I could go
but that's
on.
That's the elite argument.
Yeah.
Pryor, maybe Carlin, depending on your taste, and Chappelle.
Yeah.
That is like, that's like LeBron, Kobe,
yeah.
MJ.
It's yeah.
Pryor or Chappelle.
And I think Dave. I used to have Eddie in the decathlon beating Dave, and now I have Dave beating Eddie.
Yeah,
in the decathlon.
Yeah, I think Chappelle.
Because I now think Dave might be better at sketches than Eddie. Like, I thought I had Eddie in sketches, and then the more I, the SNLs actually weirdly are like revealing.
Uh huh.
Like Eddie's last SNL was like, you know. Solid,
yeah.
But it was like he's the most charismatic person alive, arguably one of,
yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. It's something about, I don't know. But yeah, it's like it's a muddled, it's a pack of people.
Yeah.
That, and, but it you get in specific categories. I'm like, you know,
Pryor is held up as the greatest comedian of all time, I think, more than any genre of life. More people, like he's...
But I think that's one of those things that people don't really know what they're talking about.
Okay.
Meaning, you know when people go, so-and-so are amazing live, and then they just get this category, they just get this rep for being amazing live, and then you're like, are they, or are you just saying that? Do you even, are you just regurgitating the opinion? Because I don't know why people would go, Pryor's great. Why? You know what I mean? Like, they don't, I mean, and again, I'm not saying you have to say why, but I would also argue people aren't watching it very often.
I mean, I've watched it.
Yeah.
Right? And talked to comedians about it. And I mean, like, the man was incredible. And he could do, you talk about decathlon, all sorts of
yes.
jokes, creating these characters, yes. you know, telling these stories, doing shorter bits, doing life stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, nothing was wasted. I mean, like, God, think about him getting, you know, like when he's like, after he got burned and he's like, okay, we're going to wash you. Okay. Like, we're going to wash you. Fine. Do it, bitch. Like we're going to, okay. And oh my God, that
yeah,
hurts.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's basic.
Well, some of it,
so
some
funny.
Of Pryor is so sophisticated. And some of it is a little, I was talking to somebody the other day about a bit about, me and Chris were talking, Rock, we're talking about a bit about different body parts talking to each other. Like your brain is saying to your dick, like, hey man, you got to figure, like you can't keep bringing these girls around. We're just talking about like, I was like, I've had a bit, but it's so hacky to have different body part, and he's like, yeah, but Pryor did it, so he started it, basically the anthropomorphizing of body parts, and like everything spoke in his jokes, like the car was like fuck it, and the gun was like, but you know, like everything,
right.
And
right,
so there's part of it that's it's when those work, they're amazing, but they've kind of been bastardized to the point of it's hard to do them at this point for me. I don't know,
but the comic has to have that fearlessness.
Hicks. I always forget Bill Hicks. Doug Stanhope was one of the best there was a period of Stanhope where he was fucking amazing.
Of thinking, what is it that you think I can't talk about, that I can't make funny? I'm going to talk about that and make it funny.
I got to say, I don't know very many people who approach comedy that way.
Okay, from the audience, it appears that they're like, show me the unsayable thing. I'm going to say it.
I think it's what I was saying, where the world's speaking to us all the time.
Yeah.
And there are certain categories now where it's like, you can't, you're not allowed. And then so you're like, it's not even like, where's the line I shall cross it? When everyone goes, it's a comic's job to do. No one ever tells you what a comic's job is. When you do an open mic, they go, okay, here's the job. You just do whatever you're inspired to do. I don't know many people who approach premises as the unspoken, you can't talk. There is a, you know what? I would love to talk about more, and I can't. And I, this is the thing that me and Chris talk about a lot: money. And it's like, because it's so, you can talk about, like, he has
Chappelle
a great
talks
joke
about it.
He talks about being rich. He talks about, I'm talking about what money does to people. There are very few bits about it. Like, Chris has a great bit about, like, lend somebody money and you'll never see him again. Like, that's one of the best money bits, but like the psychology of money.
What would you like to say that you feel like you can't?
Well, I can't tell you because
you can say it here.
Well, no, I guess it's, I don't, it's hard to, people very quickly go, like, rich person problem, rich person. Yeah. Okay, fine. So I won't talk about it.
Like, so it's not relatable.
It's not relatable. And also people think you're shitting on them. And it's like, I'm experiencing this thing that for instance, in Three Mics, I talk about my dad's will, right? My dad he left me out of the will. And Rock's thing was like, you know, black people don't have wills, right? And I was like, you know what they are though. No? Are you aware of them?
Ellen did.
I agree.
About,
I know she did. I worked on that special.
That was an incredible bit. And it was very self-aware.
But it was self-aware. It was a cartoon though.
Yeah, but yes, and she's mocking herself.
Yes.
And but you know that I'm rich.
Yeah, she's so rich, it's silly.
Yeah.
Like, it is silly. Now, to that point, I consulted on that special, and at one point I said, you're talking about it too much.
Mm.
And we didn't, like, get into it, but she ended up cutting one or two. There was a show where she referenced it for my taste and for the audience. To me, the laughs were up here and reference one, reference two, reference three.
Going down.
And then, but I wouldn't
still,
even go that
still high,
step,
but
that stepped, but it was like more like reference one, reference two, reference three, reference four down here.
A little lower.
Then you got to stop, right? Like, you kind of, cause now you're just getting into, like, now it's a blowout.
But you're rich.
I have a joke that I can't do, which is rich people think I'm poor and poor people think I'm rich. That I'm not really rich. Rich people think I'm poor. Poor people
but
think I'm rich.
But you have a piece of one of the biggest shows of all time. Like a good
one
piece.
Of the most respected shows of all time. But in terms
but you
of
just
not,
sold, you guys broke DVD
oh,
records.
Right. All right. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I was trying to talk more. I was trying to be relatable.
Mm. Yeah, but is it even a good show?
I'm kidding. Oh yeah, but God. I'm not like Larry. There's all, again, here's the thing about being rich. You just go, well, yeah, but I don't have Larry and Jerry money.
Right, right, right.
I don't have Judd money.
Right.
I don't have, Eddie. There's all, every, I've been on a private jet a few times, never on my dime. Whenever we land, the person who got the private jet.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, She introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
Without fail, this happens. There's a jet, there's a bigger plane at the airport, and they always look at it and go, that was the one I wanted to get. Every single time. The human condition is, we're just comparison machines. I'm like, oh, man, I'd be really happy if I was in that plane. That's the kind of thing I would like to talk about. But you can't get over the fact, like, this rich motherfucker was on a private jet. Okay. You're right. I was on a private jet. I would never get one for myself.
The bit of yours that sticks in my craw that I love the most, when you talk about the end of slavery.
Yes.
We had a good run.
Yes.
The Mexicans
We had a heck of a run. Didn't
we had a heck of a run.
Yeah, that's what white people gathered the slaves around. We're like, well, we had a heck of a run, didn't we? You guys did a bang up job with the chores these last 250 years. Now, if you'll clear out your stuff, the Mexicans will be here any minute to replace you. I have a cute story about that bit. Do the bit. No, I'm not that popular comedian at this point. George Lopez is about to do a HBO special and he texts me and he goes, did you have a joke about slavery and Mexicans replacing? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, all right, I got to cut some. He had it and he could have just strong arm me.
Did he hear it from you or he just,
I think he must have heard it.
He came up,
forgot, put it in his act.
It's funny, but you've read history. The black people replaced themselves. We just had to pay you a very small amount.
Well, of course. Why would we not make you pay us for the honor of farming our farm for us? By the way, my people got here in fucking 1920.
But you know, that's one of those jokes that I think a lot of white comedians might be afraid to do.
Yeah.
And I think you are, and you feel, I am in a lane where I can make that joke.
I'm lucky in that people will grant me that. It's about intentions, right? So if they assume, because I have some jokes now and unacceptable that aren't that charged, but like it takes a good, you need to assume that I'm decent to black people in order for me to make that joke, right?
Well, of course, all black people, at least of a certain age, know you.
Correct.
Chappelle.
I mean,
so it's like,
give or take. So right, you assume
there's a card that comes with that.
Yes. And there are some people that think if their reading of Chappelle's show was that I was the reason Dave left and all that stuff, there's a small group that believes like I'm problematic. Hmm. And the younger group, the younger people especially.
Hmm. I've studied this issue. I've never heard that.
All right. Are you a Chappelleologist? You're a Chappelle showologist?
I mean, I don't know. I talked to a lot of people who worked on that show. I wrote a whole thing about it. I mean, that's a big word, but like it was worthy of study and talking to you. And I was one of the few people who interviewed him about the show.
Oh, yeah.
And talked to Danelle. And I mean, like we had a great conversation about how Wayne Brady didn't want to say one of the most famous lines in the history of the show.
Yeah.
And you,
well,
had to kind of convince him to do it.
On behalf of the team.
Yeah.
I had to.
And I talked to Mooney about the show as well.
Great. Whatever. I think people now are looking for, it's a fight. You could come at me on Twitter and win if you're of a certain age. If you're,
that's a rewriting of the history. You are not the reason why he.
But of course, but what a lot of things are rewriting history. Like a lot of history is rewriting history.
In your break in your list of greatest of all time, we didn't name Mooney. Obviously, Mooney is on that list for you.
Yes.
I saw him.
One of my favorite, the live experience, like nothing, like nobody else I've ever seen. Not even close, honestly.
Yes.
I mean, me and Dave would go, I probably saw him live 40 times before even he was on the TV show. Like,
so comfortable, so acerbic.
Yeah.
So like a lion ready to like it was like,
but it was like, so silly at the same time. There was something like preening. Someone said it was like, he was like the hairstylist as comedian.
But he's the only person I ever remember being at all afraid at a comedy show. I was dating a light-skinned girl, and we went to see Mooney with my black male friend who was dating a white girl at Caroline's, sat us right next to the stage.
Yep.
And I was like, oh God, I'm here with the light bulb and he's here with the blonde. Mooney's gonna come out and just destroy us.
Yeah.
And he did make some comments about the white girl, but like not to the amount that I thought, but like he would just do 15 minutes of jokes.
Yeah, he's the most forgivable street joke teller I've ever seen. I didn't care.
Right.
I didn't. It's normally I'd be like, this is, again, malpractice.
Right.
But with him, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe he knows the person who first did it.
He's so old.
Somehow just like, I don't know, maybe. But he would do my favorite thing, which is he would get the audience in on attacking somebody by going like, who's that girl over in England?
Yes.
Who is it? Oh yeah, the queen. That bitch. And like,
what's her name?
What's her name? What's that boy's name? The Pope?
Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Elizabeth.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that bitch can. No, it's too much. It's too much. Was my favorite move.
Little things like that, like just bringing the audience in. It's not a passive experience. It's,
yes.
So I saw somebody do a whole breakdown of like Chappelle and the cigarette, and that he would almost smoke it and then not. And that sort of gets you.
He's told me that. Did someone do a breakdown of that?
Yeah. So what is that?
It's a just audience attention thing. It's Eddie told Chris one time, Eddie Murphy told Chris Rock, if you don't move on stage, the audience can look away. So it's just like animal instinct shit. Like, so that's why Chris darts around.
But when he does the punchline, he stands.
And then he thinks and he stirs and then and Dave does a similar thing where, I mean, he pointed this out to me when he was 19. So he got it from theater school. He went to theater school, like performing arts high school. But you grab a cigarette, you and then if you go to light it and then bring it down, you're basically saying to the audience, this is important to me, but I have something even more important to tell you. This can wait. What I have to tell you cannot. So then the audience is like, their interest is peaked.
Way of underlining.
Like, oh, this is very important. And then it creates this narrative of like, is he ever going to like that thing? Just like weird psychological things that I'm sure, like priming the audience.
I feel
stuff
like
that I don't.
I feel like as time has gone on, he just smokes the cigarette.
Now it's not, nothing's more important than smoking.
For more from me and Neil, join us over at patreon.com/Torre Show. Thank you so much to my man Neil for a great interview, and thanks to you for listening, and thanks to our super producers, Britt, Marcus Harkis, Noel Sim Montes, Jason Reynolds, Gravil Calais, Michelle Brenda Cox, Kathy F., Dr. Keena Murphy, Earl Dorsey, Theotokis, and Noma. Torre Show gives you fuel to power your dreams because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality, and this show can help. You can find me on Twitter at Torre and on Instagram at Torre Show and on Patreon at patreon.com/Torre Show. Torre Show is written by me, Torre, and produced by Jackie Garofano. Our editor is Ryan Woodhall. Our photographers are Chuck Marcus and Shanta Covington and Nick Karp. Our booker is Claudia Jean, and we're distributed by DCP Entertainment. And we will be back on Friday and on Wednesday with more amazing guests because the man can't shut us down.